Welcome to the Healthy Simplified Podcast, everyone. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of having someone on that I've only known for a short period of time. I mean, I guess it's been roughly 11 years, but I would say that Garrett and I haven't really known each other for that long. It's me more with his family, but in the last 5 years, specifically, Garrett and I have gotten to know each other a lot better, but you were in for a treat. I mean, you're talking about somebody who served our country at the most elite level in the Navy SEAL organization, somebody who has devoted their life to training men, getting them to actually become men in the ministry, as well as leadership coaching and a lot of other things. And Garrett has a very distinct background. But Garrett, I want to start out by saying thank you for being here and agreeing to be on the podcast.
It's a privilege. Every day I'm grateful to have breath in my lungs because that means God still has a plan for my life and I'm getting to do what he put me on this earth to do. So grateful to be here.
Well, that's a testament to how this thing is going to go right there. You know, it's interesting that, you know, when I look at your background and again, you know, I've basically gotten to know you through your father and your mother. You know, hearing the stories, I mean, I will never
forget,
you know, we're launching ID Life the day that your helicopter is getting shot up in some foreign country with holes everywhere, watching your mother go white, your dad on the stage trying to figure out why she's turning white and me trying to figure out what I can do to help. And there's not a whole lot I can do there, but, you know, I know family means a lot to you. And one of the things I always like to do at the beginning of any of these podcasts is get the people that are listening to get to know you a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about your family.
Yeah, if I have anything, I've got two proud parents, Scott and Darlene Uncle Bach. So I'm incredibly blessed there. One of my life scriptures is Luke 12:48, which is to whom much is given, much is required. And just in the parents that I have alone, I feel like I've been given an incredible amount. I have a wonderful father, wonderful mother. I feel like God allowed me to get some of the best out of both of them. I have a brilliant mom. She's very spiritually discerning as well. I gained that from her. And then I don't know if I fully gained my dad's gift and that everybody loves my dad, but most people like me. So that I at least I got that going for me. But yeah, I have an incredible family. I'm very blessed there. Well,
you know, the one thing I say about your father is that he is the most calm human being I've ever been around in a storm. I mean, he just has a way of just calming everything down. And your mother has a fire like you just wouldn't believe. So I think I know where you get your personality from based upon that. I don't think there's a doubt. But, you know, you also have your own family that that you're starting. I mean, it's a budding family. You have two beautiful children. Let's talk about them a little bit.
Yeah, I think everybody's favorite Uncle Bach is Lindsay, a.k.a. Sprinkles.
Yes, he is my favorite.
Yeah. People, you know, people call me and say, when are you coming around? Really, just because they want to know when Lindsay's coming around.
Yeah,
I've got two beautiful little girls, Grace and Trinity. Grace is three and Trinity is one. And hopefully many more children on the way.
Well, God willing, that would be the case. Now, you made a unique decision early on in your life. You bypassed college and decided instead you were going to enroll in the Navy, but not just the Navy.
Yes.
Yeah, so you were going to do something that very few people are willing to try, much less do. Right.
For a long time, I thought I wanted to be a pilot. And then I won't talk about my disillusionment about college, because I think everyone else is caught up on that one and realize unless you want to be a doctor, attorney, or an engineer, college might not be the path for you. But along the same time I made that decision, I realized, okay, well, if I'm not going to be a pilot, what do I want to do? And right after I graduated high school, I was just, you know, YouTube looked very different back then, but I was on YouTube watching videos of something that I had always dreamed about, which is Joseph Kittinger's Jump from Outer Space. This is video from 1962. Most people saw Felix Baumgartner jump from outer space in 2008, but that was a replication of the jump they did in 1962. And Joseph Kittinger mentored Felix for that jump. But anyways, it's fair to say I was watching that video because I was just so fascinated by that. I've always been fascinated by outer space. And YouTube suggested this video of Navy SEAL halo jumping. Which, you know, halo jumping is high altitude, low opening, jumping out of an airplane at 30,000 feet. And I was like, well, what is this, right? If I can't jump from outer space, what can I do? And that led me to, I watched Discovery Channel documentary Bud's class 234 on SEAL teams. And this was like October or November of 2009. And by June 2010, I was in the Navy. I realized as soon as I saw, like, this is the most, I mean, in the introduction clip of that Discovery Channel documentary, I said the most elite military training in the world. I said, okay, that's the one. This is where I'm going. This is what I'm doing. Cause I, you know what? I'd grown up, you know, not just my father, but some of the other people in my life, and we'll probably get to that. I'd grown up around some very leadership minded people. And I realized, and I'd learned early that if you want to go far, find people that you admire and be like them. And I feel like I'd aspired for greatness since I was young in life. And when I saw SEAL training, that was the picture for me of, okay, this is what I want to do. I wanted to serve. I grew up in a culture that taught me to serve. And SEAL training, I knew as soon as I saw it, was that right opportunity for me.
So let's talk about it. Cause you know, one of the things I have a personal passion for all things special operations, special forces. I mean, I read pretty much everything I possibly can get my hands on it. But one of the things that a lot of people don't understand, and why I said it was a unique choice on your part, especially as an 18-year-old signing up for the military, and most importantly, get in a Bud's billet to run out, is if you don't make it, or you know, you basically ring the bell, as they say, you have 4 years on a ship somewhere. I mean,
What's funny is there's a, you know, I could talk for hours about some of the great lessons I learned there. But one of the things they say is, there's a principle and there's a parallel here. One of the things they say is, like, all throughout SEAL training is don't quit. It only gets worse from here. If you quit tomorrow, you'll be chipping paint off of a ship. And you think that's a joke, right? But no, true story. I mean, like, guys who quit literally the next day, they're seaman undesignated, which means that you're in the military without a job title, no training. And what do they do in the Navy with people who have no training? You mop the floor and you chip paint off of a ship, and then you put the paint back on the ship. I had friends who quit, and literally the next day they were chipping paint off of a ship. And one of just a quick takeaway that I got from that is, because I got the, you know, one of the things that I grew the most from in the military was in my last couple of years in the military. When I joined the Navy, I'd never met a SEAL before, right? The first SEALs I ever met were my instructors, which is different than a lot of people's experience. But the last few years that I was in the military, I spent that mentoring other guys who were on their own path to join. And in that process, I discovered so much about leadership. But one of the lessons that I would teach these guys about leadership, the young men that I was mentoring, is the point of no return, right? Like, just like if you know anything about flying an airplane, there's a point on the runway where if you exceed this point on the runway, not the end of the runway, if you exceed this point of the runway, which is usually a little past half at full speed, you have decided that you are either going to crash the plane and blow it up at the end of the runway, or you're going to fly. And a lot of people get way past the point of no return without having understood where the point of no return is. And I would teach all of these guys that when you sign that contract, you're past the point of no return. Because it was so fascinating to me when I was in training, and guys would say they quit, that I just decided that I didn't want to do this anymore. And I'm like, really? You know, my path is a little bit different than most people's. From the time I first heard of SEAL training, the time I was in was 9 months. The average student would spend 2.5 to 3 years preparing for that. And it was always so fascinating to me that guys would quit and they'd say, well, I just decided I didn't want to do this anymore. Really? 3 years in, after you've known all about this, but now that it's hard, you don't want to do it anymore? You're past the point of no return. So anyways, it's just a small rabbit hole for you.
Well, you know, one of the other things I know that you have, and it's been obvious in our short conversation so far, is a very strong faith. In fact, when you got out of the military, I know one of the mentors in your life is Keith Kraft, your pastor. I don't know how close your family is with the Kraft family, but at some point he asked you to lead the men's ministry at your church. Talk about that path and what led you to that.
Yeah. So when I left, so Pastor Keith, you know, I said, I have a great father. I'm very blessed to have not just a father who loved me, but a father who was a good leader and a good example. And even more so, I didn't have just one father. I had two fathers. Pastor Keith and my dad have been best friends for over 40 years. And so he's a spiritual father in my life. Just like I said, I feel like I got to take the best out of both of my parents. I feel like I've gotten to absorb a lot of the best of Pastor Keith, I've had all these people in my life that I got to learn from. And really, I mean, he calls me his other son, and I look at him as my other father. I really do feel like I have two great fathers, because really my dad is strong. And that's why my dad and Pastor Keith are so close, because they have very different strengths. But to answer your question, when I was leaving the military, you know, I came home and said, where are the men at? I wanted to get involved with the men. And the men in our church was about 30 guys meeting at a barbecue joint. And I just went there and I started, you know, it was a couple tables with just men sitting around them. And I just sat down at a table and started to be part of the conversation and then add to the conversation. And a couple of the guys that were at that first table that I sat down at, a table in Rudy's Barbecue here in Frisco, Texas. We don't meet there anymore, but we used to. And just a great, and you know, a good friend of mine, Mark Bennett, used to come hang out with us on Saturdays. He remembered some of this. But some of the guys that were sitting at that table are still with me today. But what I said to them was, I want to serve God the way that I served with men in the military. And I don't mean with swords, because that's what a lot of people might think, you know, and that's Matthew 10:34, did not come to bring peace, but a sword, not a physical sword, but the word. That's not what I'm referring to. What I meant was the guys that I served with in the military. I remember my first deployment, combat deployment. And there's a guy that was in my fire team that we worked together that honestly, him nor I, we didn't like each other. We strongly disliked each other. We didn't want to hang out outside of work. Half the time we wanted to punch each other in the face. But going into a battle, I would have picked him 10 times out of 10 to guard my back, because we didn't like each other. We didn't like the same things. We didn't share many of the same values, but we shared the same commitment to the mission, right? This is what I'm here to do. It's bigger than both of us. And he felt the same way about me. Like, we aligned on this one thing, that it's not about me. It's not about you. I'm here to serve the mission of the SEAL teams, right? And so the way that I relate that to Christianity and discipleship and advancing the kingdom, as I've said this to, you know, to now we went from 30 guys in a barbecue joint to now we have over 300 men every Saturday. And within that is a group of about 50 to 60 leaders that help lead those discipleship groups. And I've said to the men in that room often, I like to mess with them. I say this seriously, but also joking. I say to them, many of you, I would have never chose you, right? And what I mean by that is we have different personal preferences. We don't like the same things. You don't play golf. We come from different backgrounds. But really what I care about is that you choose this mission, right? And to me, that's what Christianity has lacked for a long time, is men who, like, Christianity is not about you, right? If you're thinking in a church, I feel like I'm not getting what I want out of this place. Church is a place for you to serve. The call on our life is not to be saved. The call on our life is to advance the kingdom. And so I wanted to be around a bunch of men who understood this is what the call in our life is. Life is not for us. This is our life is a gift that God's given us, and we get the opportunity to serve with it. That's the parable of the talents. What return will you make on the life that's been given to you? I feel like God has given me an insane amount. And so I feel like I owe a debt on that, which is the understanding of stewardship. So that's just a little bit of how I got into church. And over really the last 4 years, it's grown from us meeting in a barbecue joint to now meeting in a church, and there's a lot more of us, and it's very fruitful. And many of the guys that I started with at the barbecue place are still with us today. So
let's ask, I got to ask a question, because it's not something people normally associate. You went through Navy SEAL training. You know, served our country for 6 years as a special operator. That is not for the meek of heart. Obviously you were doing the things that no one else could do. That's why they call you guys the elite. How did you maintain your servant heart, your Christianity, your beliefs with the things that you were thrown in and saw all over the world?
Yeah, I can tell you it certainly challenged that in a lot of ways. There's not a lot of Christians in the military, and I won't pretend to say that I'm perfect or ever have been perfect, but there's not a lot of Christians in the military, especially in the SEAL teams, only because that's a place where you can't be fake. In life, you can tell people you're a Christian and they'll say, okay, right? In the military, you tell people you're a Christian, they'll question everything that you do. Any story I ever told in the military, guys said, prove it, right? And I think that's one of the challenges of following God in the military, especially in the group that I was in, is that they want you to actually live it. And that's the hard part, is to live it. I had a, this is a great analogy for this. I had a SEAL instructor once early on in training. You know, when your instructors will say this to you all the time, I guess it's some of where I get some of my same attitude from. They'll say it seriously, but also joking at the same time. They'll speak to you as a student and they'll say, in the unlikely event you make it through training, because the truth is you probably won't make it through training. You know, that's the highest attrition rate of any military program. And I had this SEAL instructor early on, and he started by saying, in the unlikely event you make it through training, says it'll be a curse. Being a SEAL, says in the unlikely event you make it through training, for the rest of your life, it'll be a curse that you're a SEAL. And what he went on to talk about is how everywhere you go, people will look at you and measure themselves against you. If they can beat you in a game of ping pong, it will be significant to them, right? And he said, some people, that'll break them, right? And so I'm the point, where I'm connecting that to is, to me, this is very similar to what I feel like following God is like. Now, certainly not that it's a curse, but that it's a weight, Mark. It's something that you carry, right? That people will measure themselves again. They'll look at you and they'll judge you. And some people, they might become a SEAL and they wouldn't want to live with that for the rest of their life, right? They wouldn't want people to know. I feel like, you know, so much of what people think of Navy SEALs has nothing to do with me, Mark. The reputation the SEALs have, they had it before I got there, right? So really all that I get to do is walk in that. The best gift that I can give back to a community that benefited me greatly is to live up to that standard, to be a great reflection of what that standard looks like. Because for many people, I'm the only SEAL that they ever meet or talk to, right? So who I am is what they think of the SEAL teams after they've met me. I say the same thing about being a follower of God, that you should be a great example. You're a name bearer of what it means to be a follower of God, of what it means to be a Christian. In a business mentoring group that I lead, I was having this conversation with a guy the other day, Mark, and I said the same thing. He was struggling in his hiring, right? He's like, man, it's so hard to hire because this guy has an incredible name. He's a craftsman, right? So his work is really good and he was struggling to hire. And I said, you know, God lets us wear his name. So don't think that you're too good to let other people wear your name. That's why training is required, right? That's what God did with Adam. That's what discipleship is about. It's about training. And you have to do the same thing with your employees. You have to train them. Don't think that your name's too good for any other people to wear it, right? And so this is really the way that we have to walk as followers of Christ, is that we have to live up to that name and be carriers of it.
You know, it's that's an amazing principle that I hope people, it doesn't get lost on them. That, you know, your presence or how you hold yourself out could be how somebody judges who you hold yourself out to be, you know, Navy SEAL, follower of Christ, you know, whatever that case may be, that's where they judge you. At some point, though, you made the decision that you weren't just going to serve in your church. You weren't just going to, you know, start building your own businesses and things of that nature. You wanted to actually get into leadership coaching and teaching people how to actually become leaders, but most importantly, identify for them the lack of leadership in their own organizations, people that may have been successful in spite of themselves, not because of themselves. What kind of made you decide to get into that area?
Well, I'll tell you this first, Mark. I said there's twice in my life I've prayed this one prayer. Twice in my life, one before I joined the military when I was 19, I'm not going to be a pilot. I don't know what I'm going to do. I prayed a prayer and I said, God, why did you make me this way? And I'm not mad at God, but don't question God as if he did something wrong. But you can certainly question God in a seek to understand mentality. And I said, why did you, I don't understand why you made me this way, because I feel like I have unique gifts and abilities and I don't know what to do with them. And very shortly after that, God showed me the SEAL teams. Post-military, I worked one job after when I first got out of the military, and I'd been there for almost a year, and I prayed this prayer again. And I said, God, why did you make me this way? Right? Cause I feel like I have more than what you're allowing me to do. And God was teaching me a lesson of faithfulness in both of those seasons, to trust him, to be faithful with what I've been given. But right after that, shortly after I prayed that prayer, I didn't advertise coaching or anything like that for years. I had a guy come to me and say, I've listened to you. People around you have told me what you've done in their life, right? Because I feel like I've been coaching people, honestly, since I was 16 years old. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just trying to help people. I wanted to serve. I wanted to help people solve their problem. I know you can relate to that, Mark. You're a great problem solver. And so the first person I ever coached was someone who came to me and said, from what I've heard, sounds like you could help me solve my problems. And so I've always had a desire for effectiveness. I think I got that from my father, that I want to be useful. And leadership is the, I think, the most important ability on the planet. Everything requires leadership. If things go well, it's because of leadership. If things go poorly, it's because of leadership. Leadership can change the world. And I also care about people deeply, and I care about their problems. I think God's given me a uniqueness to both be able to solve problems, but care about people where they're at. And certainly that was a learning lesson for me early on in coaching in life. I was trying to make people like me, and that doesn't work very well. I had to learn the uniqueness of people. This is a misunderstanding of people. Henry Ford, I love Henry Ford. I've studied him greatly, but one of Henry Ford's infamous quotes was, he said, "I tried to hire a pair of hands, but instead I got the whole person," right? He just wanted someone to stand there on an assembly line. He didn't want people. But really what I learned in the SEAL teams that was very interesting to me and very intriguing, I would ask questions all the time of my peers, and like, why are you asking me this? Because I was so intrigued by people. That guys came from so many different walks of life. In my boat crew in Hell Week, I had a billionaire son and another guy whose parents were meth dealers, right? People from all walks of life, from all abilities, from all mindsets. You'd think all SEALs are cut from the same cloth, and I can show you the thread that we all share. But there's a lot of very different individuals in the SEAL teams that all come together into one common purpose. And so I would tell you part of the reason I'm in leadership coaching is because I'm fascinated by humanity, but also it's out of a desire to be useful. And just like I want to be great, I want to help other people become great as well.
You know, a common misconception is that SEALs are full of the elite athletes of the world. You know, that's what they are. And I try to...
I thought I was a really good athlete, Mark, until I met one.
Exactly. It's, you know, I tell people all the time that, you know, it's the elite athletes that usually quit because they've never had a challenge in their life. It's the people that are mentally strong that make it through the SEAL teams.
It's the guy who's the scout team leader, like, you know, never played on varsity. He just led the scout team. Those are the guys who are used to getting beat up, the guys who are used to getting pushed over, guys who are, they know what it feels like to be beat down, and they just keep going anyways. That's certainly one of the traits that's common to SEALs for sure.
So when you got into leadership coaching, what is, you know, some of the things that it has actually taught you as the coach?
You know, teaching will teach you what you really know. The first time, you know, the military spent millions of dollars teaching me a lot of things, spent millions of dollars teaching me how to shoot. And then I remember the first time that I ever ran a range for civilians, and I can shoot lights out against anybody except professional marksmen, right? And the first time I was trying to teach civilians how to shoot, it certainly wasn't unsafe, and they all had a really good time. They all had a really good time, but I finished and I was like, what am I doing? Right? Because the difference between where I got them and where I knew I could take them was so vast. And I think every opportunity that God's given me to lead people, again, I'm fascinated by helping people grow and become who they're called to be. And I can tell you one of the big, and I'd say this is the biggest lesson. There's a mindset that you have to have about struggles that you get in your life, about any weight that you carry. I've joked before and told people, you know, when tough things happen to you in your life, it's like a weight vest. And think, Mark, if I came to your birthday and I get, you know, like a weight vest, like a 20-pound, 40-pound weight vest, and think if I gave you a weight vest for your birthday and you cried, right? That's how some people treat the problems that God has given them, right? Weights are an opportunity for you to grow. If you wear a weight vest every day, you'll get stronger, right? If you run from the weight, you will get weaker. One of the weights that God gives us is the weight of leadership. Leadership is a loss of privileges. You can't, one of my standards of leadership is lead from the front, right? Not do as I say, it's do as I do. Everything that I've led, and you know, when I do get the opportunity to mentor people, whether one-on-one or in groups, I say, look, I'll tell you when I'm talking about things that I'm not an expert in. You ask my opinion in certain things, I'll tell you about them, but I will tell you when I'm speaking in authority. And when I'm speaking in authority, this is stuff that I've walked in, this is stuff that I've been fruitful and proven in. And that's a weight that'll make you better. Nothing has motivated me more in life than, you know, this is again, the principle of stewardship. To whom it's not just Luke 12:48, but stewardship is understanding those who are faithful with little will become ruler over much, right? And so the first thing that all of us get to lead is ourselves. If you'll lead yourself well, God will give you opportunities to lead others. And God's given me an opportunity to lead others, and I take that very seriously. Just like I say to the leaders in our men's group, you carry the weight of other men's souls. Your decision influences people's eternity, right? Everyone's responsible for their own choices, but you're responsible for the people that you lead and influence. And the more that I've felt that, honestly, that's shaped me more than any desire for myself. Just like my friends, Mark, that you can see behind me, I have friends who gave their, friends who gave their life for this country. And my friend Charlie died with a smile on his face. That wasn't because it did anything for him. It was because he knew the cause that he had given his life to, and he found it valuable to have done so, right? He wasn't smiling for all the loss that he was going to leave behind, the hurt that he left behind, had just recently gotten married, but he did believe in what he was serving, right? And as a leader, you don't lead for your own sake. If life was all about you, there'd be no sacrifice. If life was all about you, get as much as you can, keep as much as you can. Doesn't matter who you hurt. But when your life is about serving other people, leadership is an opportunity that it'll make you work harder than you would have ever worked for yourself. And so I would tell you, that's the greatest lesson I've learned from leadership is the weight of leadership. And when you have the right attitude about that weight, it only makes you better and better for the rest of your life.
You know, one of the principles that I have and always have had is, you know, it's blame up, credit down. You know, as the leader, it's your fault. You just have to accept it. Okay. Right. And all the credit needs to be pushed down. I always say one of the telltale signs of the wrong leader is the person that takes credit for things. The person that's giving credit to others is the person that you want to get to know a little bit better. But, you know, I only have that principle because of, you know, people that have been in my life, you know, strong mentors that have taught me a lot of things, usually allowing me to learn it the hard way, which means I made my own mistake. They didn't let me learn by theirs. But you've had some pretty amazing mentors in your life. Who would you basically say that those men and women are?
You know, the Bible says we have many teachers, but few fathers. There's a lot of people that I've learned lessons from and admired from afar, or people that I would say are on my board of advisors, which is all kinds of people in my life, living and dead, who, you know, I consult for wisdom. But I've only had a few mentors in my life, because mentors are people, you know, as my friend Josh Kraft has said, I love the way that he put this. He says that when someone is a mentor in your life, you take their suggestions as commands, right? And that's the weight that we have to give to God's voice in our life, right? But mentors are people that you take their suggestions as commands. There's only three people that have held that role in my life. One is my father. The other is Pastor Keith, who we've talked about. And the third is a guy named Philip Moss. Mark, I'm not sure if you know Philip. You might have met him at my house before, but Philip's another mentor in my life. He's a very biblical leader. He's a business coach. And he's someone who he knew it before I did, that he felt like God assigned him to me. He used to be, when I was young, he was my father's friend. And when I got out of the military, he came to me and told me how, you know, God's woken me up in the middle of the night. I've prayed for you more than I've prayed for any of my own children. And we didn't even have any relationship before, but he's a very wise business mentor. And so there's so many things I've learned in my life, either from my father, from Pastor Keith, or from Philip Moss. And I can tell you that I know what I'm a product of, right? Everyone has to know who their mentors are. Who are the voices in your life? The lie of my generation, Mark, is the lie of the self-made man, that I figured it out all myself. I did it all by myself. I didn't need anybody's help. I know exactly who I am, and I know where I got it from.
You know, I usually find the people that are proclaiming the self-made man are usually the people that have a lot of bodies left in their wake, as they say. They stepped on them until they didn't need them anymore. So what do you do yourself to become a better leader? You know, when you're a leader, especially a leader of leaders, sometimes becoming a better person in and of yourself can be a challenge. So what do you do?
Yeah, that's great. Great question, Mark. You'll appreciate this story. So when Lindsay and I, for those of you who know the wonderful Sprinkles, if you don't, you're just missing out. I do. I think you know this, Mark. The day that I met her, we went on our first date to Disneyland. I knew right away that we were going to get married. I was with her till like 2 a.m. We were just talked. And then I called my dad and told him, I found the girl I'm going to marry. I knew after our first date. And so obviously we progressed very quickly, but this was right before I was going on deployment. And I knew that was a really great test of a relationship. But I say that to say, we had been dating for like a month, and a month is a long time when you both know on your first date that you're supposed to be married. And so we were very committed at this point, but we'd been dating for about a month, and I had this conversation with her, and I said, there's one thing that'll make this not work. And that's a pretty serious, again, you know, it's not like we were married at that point, but very committed to each other when, you know, on the first date you feel that way. I said, there's one thing that'll make this not work. I said, for the rest of my life, I'm going to grow. And if you don't want that, this will be painful for both of us, right? And not just that I want to grow, but I want to grow in being Christ-like. I want to get closer to God. And I learned this from Pastor Keith. He talks about a triad of you be your best for God, I'll be my best for God. We'll meet at the top. And so really the ways that I grow as a leader is, number one, that I have a desire to grow, right? Where does it, if life is all about you, right? The desire should be to be comfortable, right? That's not my desire. My desire is not to be comfortable. My desire is if you can see me, I don't know if you're doing video for this, Mark, but I have a painting behind me that someone from my podcast painted for me. And it's a picture of me kneeling before the throne of God. And some people might say it's cheesy. I love it. It's a picture that someone painted of me kneeling before the throne of God and God giving me a thumbs up. And it says, well done. There's two things that we know the Bible tells us we can hear. There's one is that Jesus would say, on the day that you die, turn away from me, I never knew you, which is a very scary thing that you could hear. The other thing that we learn from the New Testament is that we could hear, well done, good and faithful servant, right? And that's what I most desire to hear is, well done, good and faithful servant. And so what I know is that to do that, if God has a plan for my life, if God's given me all of these things and all these abilities that I have to grow, I'm going to have to make use of them. This is the parable of the talents. Right? Did you use what God had given you? Did you grow it? Did you multiply it? So number one, as a leader, I'm going to grow because I know that the weight of leadership that God has for me requires that I grow. Number two, I'm intentional about the things that I grow in, right? Someone asked me the other day, what do you do for fun? Right? And I laughed. Because you know what? Like, I'm not saying like, I've won. That's why I married Lindsay, because she's so fun. That's not like, fun is not one of my core values, right? But what I am very much about is I know we have a short life to live, Mark, and I want to fulfill my purpose. So I'm very intentional about growing in the things that God has for me. All this, everything in my life is about one thing. And one of the things that I know I need to grow in is wisdom, right? Wisdom is knowing what's best. Wisdom is knowing God's way of doing things. And James, the brother of Jesus, says, if you need wisdom, ask for it and it'll be given to you. But here's what I believe about wisdom. Wisdom is a resource, and God is not wasteful in how he gives out resources. Just like the parable of the talents, again, this is a principle of stewardship. If you understand principles, you understand the way the world works. Principles govern outcomes. And every time Jesus tells a parable, he says the kingdom of heaven is like this. He's talking about heaven and he's talking about earth because it sits under the kingdom. And if you understand, he's talking to a bunch of 15-year-old fishermen. And he says, if you can understand this simple story, you can understand the way everything works. And that's the power of wisdom. If you have wisdom, you don't have to have experience, right? Because you know how things work. And one of the ways that wisdom works is it's a resource. And God will give to those who are faithful with what they've been given. You can pray and ask for wisdom and God will give it to you. He may give you $5 of wisdom. You better make a return on that. The first time you pray and ask for wisdom, he's not going to give you a Solomon portion of wisdom. So every day I'm trying to use the wisdom that God's given me, right? And so the other side of wisdom is obedience. Do you do what you know to do? Because wisdom increases your knowledge and your understanding. So really as a leader, those are the things that I'm constantly trying to grow in is my wisdom and my obedience to the word of God.
Well, the one thing I will warn you against is don't ever pray for patience because you don't get patience. You get lots of opportunities to be patient.
You know, that's right. Don't pray for patience. Don't pray for humility. God will give you opportunities for both. I did learn some great lessons on patience in the military. Patience is really one of the most difficult lessons I had to learn in the military, but I learned the power of patience. And if I could just, I learned that through a lot of things in the military, but if I could just say from a biblical perspective on patience, when you're trying to rush things, right? We have a finite life. And when we're trying to rush things, we're trying to move things on our timeline. Mark, I think you've heard me talk about this before, but God made us in his image, right? And so we are not God, but he made us in his image. And in the same way that God created everything through speaking, right? Until he made man. If you understand the story of Genesis, he made everything with his words until he made man. God gave us a voice. There's a reason that nothing else on the earth can speak. It's not an intelligence quotient, right? It's because God made us in his image, right? The ability to speak is a God-like ability. God gives us a measure or an understanding of who he is and all the ways that he's made us. One of the qualities that God has is his ability to move through time. I haven't figured that one out yet, Mark. I wish I could move through time, but here's what I do have, right? I have an understanding of who God is and that he moves through time, and I've seen him change the past before. How does God change the past, Mark? The things in your life, when you come to know the Lord, he'll change your story. The things in your life that were meant to hurt you, that were meant to break you, through a redemptive story of Christ, you'll understand that he was building you in all of these qualities. And when you see what God can do with the past, it'll change your outlook of the future, right? When you're on God's timeline and you serve a father who can move in and out of time, I'm exactly where I need to be all the time, because there's very few things I can control in life, especially not time. So I'm not going to worry about those things. I'm going to worry about what I can control. And when you feel that way, because one of the great things of patience is an understanding of timing. And if you're always trying to rush, you're never going to be where you're supposed to be at the right time. Timing is being in the right place at the right time, and you don't get there by rushing.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I've never really spoken publicly about, I actually have a book outlined that I've been writing for several years. I promised my kids I would write this. And the principle behind it is literally, I mean, the working title is Laughing with God. The general thing I basically say in there is that every time I made plans, God's laughed and basically said, oh yeah, watch this. Actually, and every chapter is something that happened in my life that when somebody looks back and they're not me, would think, oh my goodness, this was a horrific event in your life. Because I didn't grow up the easiest. But what I tell in the book that I'm writing is that each one of these things made me who I was, because I learned the lesson that I was supposed to learn so that I got the opportunity to get the next lesson. You know, I was a practicing trial lawyer for 20 years so that I can do what I'm currently doing. And that's led me to now be able to do some of the other things that I'm doing. It's just everything in my life happened for a reason. And that's a big part of who I am and why when things happen, they're not happening to me. They're opportunities for me to understand and grow through. So as part of that, though, you have started your own podcast. In fact, you have something even beyond a podcast. You know, The Impossible Life is the podcast, but you have something called the Mindset Mastery. Let's talk a little bit about that and what that is, what that entails.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, the story of this podcast is fascinating in and of itself. My co-host, who's now one of my best friends, Nick Surface, he started as a coaching client. And Nick is a very successful marketer. Worked for massive clients such as Ticketmaster and Rawlings, managing seven-figure monthly ad spends. I'm not knocking anybody, but there's a lot of people in marketing. Not everyone in marketing really knows marketing. Nick's very fruitful in marketing. The proof's in the pudding. You know a man by his fruit. Nick's fruit in marketing is there. And so he started as a coaching client. He moved here, in the middle of like the COVID craziness from California. And just like where I rescued Lindsay from, Nick moved here out of that process, and he got involved in our men's group, and he attached himself to me as a leader, and then he got into a one-on-one coaching relationship with me. And Nick had done all kinds of other coaching environments and things like that, and he said, "Man, I've worked with all these people, been through all of these programs, done Tony Robbins, done all of these things, and I've heard you say things that I've never heard before. Why don't you have a podcast?" And I was like, "Look, I think that'd be great. Maybe that day will come. But I know how much work all of that takes. And, I know it's not just having something to say. There's a lot of technical work and all of those things. And I'm in a busy season of my life right now." He said, "Well, look, what if I show up at your house and set up all the equipment and just hit record for you, and I'll take care of the rest?" And I said, "Sure." And so that was almost 3 years ago. September will be 3 years ago for when he first said that. And so it's been quite the journey with the two of us. And for the impossible life, really what it is, people ask about what that is. If you listen to our podcast, The Hook set references a lesson that I learned in the military. The answer to every impossible question starts with the mindset of, if I had to, what would it take? Right. And one of the things that I have to do is I'm going to get the most out of my life. I'm going to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. Really, the impossible life is a secular hook for me, an analogy to the crown of life, which Paul talks about, that you've gotten that you've served well in your life. I say that to say, the impossible life is a mindset podcast. We have guests occasionally. We don't do a bunch of guests, but it's just been an opportunity for me to explore thinking from a biblical perspective, from a SEAL perspective. And what's cool too, a lot of people jump on the show and they're like, man, I love this. I'm going to go back to the beginning. And people, you know, jump in now and they go back to the beginning and they hear Nick. Really, some of the fruit of that podcast is the transformation in Nick's life. And I'd say that with him here, because people say, they're like, man, Nick has changed so much from us just doing the podcast and stuff together. Now we have a program. We actually have two programs, one called the Purpose Driven Profit Accelerator, which is for businesses where I get to do really my favorite product. My favorite topic to talk about is purpose. So in the Purpose Driven Profit Accelerator, we take businesses through a program where I help them develop their purpose, which is their vision, mission, values, and principles. And then Nick works from them with them from a marketing perspective. He would call what I do the best brand work. And so we kind of blend our superpowers together. That's a fun product. The other thing we do through the Impossible Life is called Mindset Mastery. He prompted me and he said, you know, if you're going to teach someone to think like you think, what would you teach them? And I said, you know, that's not a short answer, right? The military, everybody wants to, you know, everyone wants to be shoot tactical and do all the cool stuff. The military spent tens of millions of dollars training me. So don't think that you could learn that in a short amount of time. Equally so, don't think that you can pick up, like everyone wants the easy steps, right? When I bring people into the Mindset Mastery program, I ask them if they're willing to do the work. Right? Because there is no easy button for upgrading your thinking, but make no mistake, if you will think better, everything in your life gets better. So Mindset Mastery is a year-long program. If you'll commit about an hour and a half a week to the program, you'll come out the other side thinking very differently. You can see the testimonials on our website, but there's 12 topics that I teach on there. And I go deep. If you like the podcast, Mindset Mastery, it's the college course version. I go very deep on teaching these topics of identity, purpose, awareness, self-leadership, discipline, motivation, principles, perspective, alignment, fear and pain, focus, and time management. So those are some of the other things I get to do besides the underneath the podcast.
So I want to shift gears a little bit and get into more of what I'm going to call the meaning of being a leader, because I think that there are two distinct types of people in the world in business. One of them are what I'm going to call the title leader, and one is the permissive leader. I'm oversimplifying things, obviously, but I would like to see, or at least hear, for purposes of our listeners, your take on that, because there's, in my mind, a big difference between a leadership by title and a leadership by permission principle.
Yeah. Well, let's start with what leadership is. I know this is an audience very familiar with John Maxwell, and I am as well. By the way, before, let me just rabbit hole really quick, because I know this audience will appreciate this, and then I'll come back to the definition of leadership. You know, sometimes people ask me, you know, like, how do you hear from the Lord? How do you know the voice of the Lord? Well, Romans 10:17 says faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. If you want to know what the voice of the Lord sounds like, that's why God's given us the Bible. John 1 it tells us it's the manifest mind of God in a form that we can understand it. But the analogy I make for people is, you know, I love John Maxwell, and he's written, gosh, I don't know how many books, 30 books, 40 books,
over
maybe more.
At this point.
He's written a lot of books. Okay. Well, exactly.
A lot.
Right. I think I've read probably a dozen John Maxwell books, and all of his content's fantastic. But what the point I'm making about John Maxwell is the way that he writes and his storytelling and his messaging, just the way that he writes is very consistent. And I'm not saying if you've read one, you've read them all. But I will say, when you've read one and you read another, you're like, yeah, this is John Maxwell. Yeah, this is John Maxwell. And imagine that you had read all 100 or so of his books. You don't know what his voice sounds like. You don't know what he looks like. But you go to a conference and you see somebody speaking. You don't know what their name is, but you see them speaking. You would hear John Maxwell speaking And immediately you would know that's John Maxwell because he speaks just right. like he writes, right? They're all the same. And it's the same is true of the voice of the Lord, right? If you read the Bible enough, when God speaks, you know, that's the voice of the Lord. So I like to use John Maxwell because he's written so many books and he's written more than Bible, 66 books. John's, I guess, written more than that. But again, that's how you know the voice of the Lord. But what is leadership? You know, John Maxwell says leadership is influence. And I 100% agree with that. I will say, but my favorite quote on leadership is not John Maxwell. My favorite quote on leadership is Eisenhower. Similar to what John Maxwell said, Eisenhower said, leadership is getting people to do what you want, when you want, and they want to do it, right? It's a different take on influence, right? And they want to. That's the hard part. It's easy to tell people what you want them to do. Title may give you the authority to tell people that they have to, but leadership is that people want to. And so that my personal definition of leadership is two parts. It's creating a vision of the future and inspiring others to make that vision a reality. You cannot inspire everyone, but you can inspire some people. You know, I've learned a lot of great things in my life again, and I can tell you where I learned them from. Mark, I learned so much about mission from the SEAL teams. I learned a lot about vision from after the SEAL teams. I'm involved with through some of my friends in the SEAL teams involved in venture capital. And I get the opportunity to visit with and be around and speak into some of these tech groups and spoke into rooms where, other than me, everyone in the room is 9 and 10 figures. And then there's me in there getting to bring what I get to bring. And I've learned a lot about vision from some tech founders. And the truth be told, many of these people are very godless, but they do have an understanding of the principle of vision. And here's what vision is. Vision in its greatest form, Mark, is a story. God's telling a story, right? And story is a set of facts and the order and priority that you give to him. When you tell stories well, people want to participate. Let me give you an example. Great companies have both vision and mission. Vision is why you do what you do. Mission is the very clear what. And it's a why that's not about you, right? Again, this is the principle of the way God made us. There's a God and it's not me. That's what Charlie Clark says. I love that. Right? The world does not revolve around you. And so a vision is a great opportunity. It's a great story that's not about you. For example, a company whose your job is not to make money, right? Zig Ziglar said, money's not the most important thing, but it's second only to oxygen, right? That's true, but money's not your purpose, right? When you know your purpose, you know how to add value. When you're good at adding value, you'll make a lot of money. But I say all that to say, vision is kind of like this. If your vision is to build your castle, metaphorically speaking, that's make money, right? If that's what you're all about, you will pay for it. What is a castle? A castle is where the king protects himself and it's where he stores his gold, right? And nobody wants to do that. If you want to build a castle, you will pay for every single brick in that wall, right? And you might overpay depending on what type of king you are. On the flip side of that, instead of building a castle, if you want to kill a dragon, right? Dragons are problems in the world. Dragons are things that need to be problems that need to be solved, problems that plight a lot of people. If you start talking about a dragon that needs to be killed, you'll have other people, metaphorically speaking, say, leave their farm and say, you know what? I'm coming with you. I'm going to kill that dragon too. And that's the power of a great vision. It inspires people to want to be a part of it. Right. So my personal definition of leadership is that you can create a vision of the future and inspire others to make a reality. The difference between, and I'll just hit on this really quick, Mark, the difference between what a vision is what you see of your purpose, right? Ephesians 2:10 says that God created us for good workmanship. When God made Mark, God made a purpose for Mark. You don't know what it is, but God made one for you. You can get close to it. You can feel it. You can understand what it is. But just like the story of Joseph's life, Joseph had a dream or a vision, right? And his vision was that his brothers would bow down to him, right? That's what he believed he was supposed to do. And he held on to that through the toughest of circumstances. Really, the purpose of Joseph's life in the Bible was that he would save all of the Israelites from starvation and famine. That was what God appointed Joseph to do. Joseph couldn't see that till the end of his life. What he did see is that he was supposed to be a leader and that his brothers were supposed to bow down to him. And so what a vision is, it's an inspiring story that God, between the things that God puts in our heart, between the opportunities, the things that God puts in our hand, right? He'll lead us to things. And a vision is something that many people's purposes can pull in together. right? Again, so I could talk about that for a long time. I'll just say the definition of leadership to me is to create a vision of the future and inspire others to make that vision a reality. It's what I talk about all the time at Mighty Men. It's the vision of what advancing the kingdom of God is like.
You know, it's funny. I always tell people I am the worst salesman on the planet because I have no interest in selling anything to anybody. I just want to help them. And sometimes helping them doesn't mean I'm selling them anything. It's just giving them information. So what's funny is it's funny how things happen. And when you do it for the right reason, what comes out of that. But, you know, part of the reason why I always focus on trying to just help every person that I possibly can is because I'm trying to create a culture, within the four walls of a company. Let's talk a little bit about leadership and its impact on corporate culture, because, you know, there can be a very positive impact or there can be a very negative impact. But let's talk a little bit about culture, because I know that's near and dear to your heart.
Yeah. I love culture. I'll just say real quick on your last question, then we'll jump back to culture. You also asked me about title versus permission. I'll just say with that understanding of what Maxwell said, of what Eisenhower said, that it's influence, right? That a title doesn't mean you're influential. A title doesn't predicate influence any more than having a baseball glove predicates your ability to catch a ball, right? So just because you are the CEO or the manager, whatever you are, that doesn't mean you have any ability to influence. On the other side of that, you can have no title. And I've been in this position, right? There were times in my life where I said, God, why did you make me this way, right? Why do I not have the title? He says, son, I want you to learn a lesson here. Right. What I want you to learn is that you don't need a title to be influential. You can lead by serving. You can lead by caring for others. Right. God's given everyone the ability to lead. You know, in this country, you have to be 16 years old to drive a car. But God gave you the keys to your body when you were born. Right. You have the flesh that you have to lead. And that's the thing about your flesh is it's your body. Your body's not who you are. It's something that you have and you have to lead that. So we're all called to be leaders. But having a title certainly has nothing to do with that. A title should be fruit of your ability to lead, but that's not always the case.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things I try to tell people is that if you want the next thing in your organization, if you want this new job, you want this promotion, you want whatever that is, there's two things that you have had to have done. One of them is you have to train your replacement. Who are you training to replace you? And the second thing is, when did you start doing the job that you want? Not waiting for permission to do it, but actually doing the job that you want. And a lot of times, especially you know, nowadays, it seems like that's harder and harder for people to understand. I mean, we're dealing with a lot of generational issues right now, where it's kind of like, hey, you just hired me. Why aren't I a manager yet? It's hold on, you have something to learn first. People don't get the concept of you have to serve before you get to lead. If you don't believe me, join a church. You'll see what I'm talking about. You don't get a leadership title to begin with. You start serving. And then once you serve for a while and understand what it means, then you get leadership opportunities. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to follow back up on, because I think it's very important, is that whole concept behind leadership's impact on corporate culture. Because I think you and I could probably spend 2 hours just talking on corporate culture and the things like that. And I know we don't have that time to do that, but I do want you to touch on the principle of it, because it doesn't take much for a leader who, especially a leader who talks down rather than talks up. And what I mean by that is, if you complain down within an organization, you know, it's amazing how that can kill a culture faster than anything. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, corporate culture and its and leadership's impact on it.
Culture is probably one of my favorite things to talk about. Deloitte did a study, and I want to say it was 2018 or 2019, on the impact of culture and in massive organizations around the world. They did this huge study on how culture was the key to their success. Where they're failing in culture. Where companies were spending the most money, it's in trying to improve culture. And I would say right now, one of the challenges in culture is that people don't even know what it is. And as recently as Sandy Weiss, who was the CEO of Citigroup, about a decade ago, former CEO, he said, Sandy Weiss, CEO of Citigroup, massive organization, said, what is culture except what's found in yogurt? That was his understanding of culture, of such a massive organization. Culture is not something that you create. Culture is a byproduct, right? And here's what I can tell you. It's sometimes easier to understand what culture isn't than what it is. But here's what I can tell you about culture is that when you have a great culture, again, the SEAL teams are an example of this. And I've got to experience some. I've gotten to spend time at SpaceX and all kinds of great companies. People that have great culture have certain aspects of culture. I'll come back to that in a second. But I'll just say what culture is. Culture is a byproduct, right? And when you have great culture, everyone wants to be around you, right? If you have bad culture, people will avoid you. You're like a government company that they only work with you when they have to. If you have a great culture, think like the SEAL teams, people are trying to figure out how to do stuff with you, right? If you're a great organization, you're in a different industry than somebody and they want to figure out how to spend time with you, how to put their name next to you. In a great culture, people are inspired. In a great culture, people know clearly what they want to do. One of the hallmarks of a great culture is that people are growing, right? Just like the parable of the sower in the Bible, when you put a seed in fertile ground, it grows, right? In your organization, are people growing and being trained? Are they growing up to the next level? Or in your culture, in your organization, is it very difficult for people to grow? Is your organization stuck at a certain level? That's all a reflection of culture. And where does culture come from? Culture comes from, and the way that I look at it and teach it and define it, culture comes from a few key things. Number one, your vision, which we already talked about. It's the greater purpose of your organization, what you're inspiring people to do. The other side of vision is mission. Vision is a story. It inspires people, right? But on the other side of that is mission. Mission is it's not the opposite, but it's the other side of the coin from vision. Mission is a very clear statement. Every mission I went on in the military, the last thing we talked about was the commander's intent. It was a very clear statement. It said, go here and kill this person. Go here and destroy this piece of equipment. Go here and recover these people. Go here and surveil this equipment. No one read the mission as like, man, what are we supposed to do? And every mission we were on, we had the mission statement and we knew whether we had failed or succeeded. Oftentimes I work with organizations. People will call me in, Mark, and be like, hey, come motivate our people, which is funny to me anyways. I don't know if you might see myself as a motivational speaker, but I get introduced as one. But before I do, I like every organization I've ever spoken at, I like to speak with the people before. And one of the most common things that I find is they'll say, hey, come motivate our people. And then I'll talk to them and I'll find that everyone's not on the same mission. They don't know what the mission is, or people are saying different missions, right? That's very frustrating. Where on the other side of that, Patrick Lencioni says in his book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team, a book I highly recommend for organizational leaders, Patrick Lencioni said, when you can get everyone rowing in the same direction, you can dominate in any industry against any competition at any time. I have experienced that in the SEAL teams and know it to be true, right? That's the power of mission. Next, these are the things that lead to your culture. Next is values. A lot of people will talk about core values. There's different definitions of core values. I would say that I've learned all these things in different places in my life. And I've for a long time been figuring out how to work them all together, because I'll read one person's book about vision and then I read another person's book and it's different definitions. And I've tried to fit them all into the same framework. And the way that I like to look at values for a business is they're not moral things. I'm not saying you're wrong if integrity is a core value for you, but everyone should have everyone should have integrity. Really what core values are is it's your unique approach. It's some of your methodology, right? One of my personal core values is excellence. It's not a heaven or hell issue. It's not a sin issue, right? Not everyone, my co-host on the podcast, Nick, he's very much a hard worker and a get it done guy. Excellence is not one of his core values, right? We work together great in that. To me, if it's not done in its best, I don't want to put my name on it. I'm not through with it, right? I could talk for all day about excellence, but the point I'm getting to is about values. Values is what you value that adds value, right? It's not, let's be honest. Everyone should be honest. Everyone should have integrity, but you need to know your unique ways of adding value. And then the fourth thing is principles. Principles is an understanding of what governs outcomes. Just like if you are into aircraft, you understand the principles of lift, thrust, weight, and drag. If you know those things, you can get an airplane that weighs more than your house to fly. If you don't know the principles of flight, you can make a plane as light as a feather and it still won't fly. When you know what principles are, when you know that when you put seed in the ground and you water it, it's going to grow, principles govern outcomes. So when you know your vision of why you're doing something, when you know have your mission, you're clear what you're doing, when you know what you value that adds value, and you know what principles govern outcomes in your industry, that's when you have a very clear culture. right? But people let all these wrong things and they add people to their team. They don't help them understand the vision and mission. They add people to their team and these people think it's their job to bring their own set of values, right? You add people to your team that don't have a clear understanding of the principles governing outcomes in your industry, and you get a mixed match of culture, right? But great cultures are pure, and great cultures attract other people to something special in the organization.
You know, you mentioned something earlier about one of the telltale signs of a great organization is you see growth. One of the things I want to ask you about, because there's a lot of...
I would say more intentionally is fruit, right? There's a difference between growth and fruit.
There's something that happens a lot in organizations with, especially people that are what I'm going to call mid-tier or just started, which is they think they can't lead yet because they don't have the title. They're not there yet. And I basically refer to it as leading from the bottom or leading from the middle. You know, it's always one of those principles of, you know, when I'm evaluating talent, one of the things I'm looking for are those people that are basically leading before they have the title. Again, this is not a title versus permission thing. It's just, it's a general who they are type thing. So let's talk a little bit about that concept of kind of leading from the bottom, leading from the middle, and what that looks like.
One of my favorite lines from the SEAL ethos is ready to lead, ready to follow. It's part of the definition. It's part of the ethos is a great reflection of the SEAL culture, right? And is one of the things that defines us is I'm not waiting to be told, right? Anyone who's a business owner understands the frustration of an employee that says, nobody told me to do that, right? And the SEAL ethos says, ready to lead, ready to follow. This is what it says, in the absence of leadership, I will take charge. It's an understanding, if I don't have a senior person around who's leading, that means I'm in charge. One of the things the military does well that civilians can learn a lot from is military has clear chain of command. People understand who's leading and who's not. Even if you have five people of the same rank on a team, right? Five E5s or five E6s, you know which one's in charge, right? Sometimes that's by time and service. Other times it's by other roles and responsibilities, right? When we were jumping out of a plane, I was a jump master. We were jumping out of a plane. Doesn't matter if you're a captain or an admiral. If you're jumping out of the plane, you work for me until we get out of the plane, right? But I say that to say is an understanding of who's leading and who's following. Everyone has to be good at both, right? Something I've learned well from Pastor Keith, he says, and this will break your geometry brain, but he says, if you're too big to follow, you're too small to lead. You have to be a great follower to be a great leader. Until you learn how to follow, you will never be a great leader. Everyone has to be good at both. Everyone is naturally good at one or the other. Some people are more naturally inclined to lead and they need to learn how to follow. Some people are naturally very good followers and they need to learn how to lead, not when they want to, but when it's needed, right? And that which is the leadership question. Leaders are always asking this question, what's needed here, right? Because it's not about you. What does the mission require of me? And if you are a mission-minded, a mission-focused person, you're saying, what does this mission require of me? Not what do I want to do? What do I feel comfortable being a part of? Right. So again, back to what I talked about with culture, when you have a healthy culture, when you're clear on vision, mission, values, and principles, and everyone in the organization, everyone on the team understands that, people will lead when they have to, because it's not about what I like to do, what the mission requires of me. And I'm not here for a paycheck. I'm here because I believe in what this organization is doing. Right. So I would just say on leading from the middle or leading from the bottom, it's having a clear understanding of purpose, having the mindset of ready to lead, ready to follow.
So I want to shift gears and ask you, I mean, I know that personal health is a big thing for you. And I know it's something that you train into your Mighty Men as part of the church organization. You know, it's also a biblical principle.
We just did a fitness test, this past week. And, you're wondering what kind of church organization I'm leading, but yeah, we just did a fitness test where everyone ran 2 miles, did max squats, max pushups, and then did a weighted carry for 400 meters. Because I do believe in physical discipline. I certainly don't think it has anything to do with your salvation, but I do believe the body is a temple. It's a temple of the Holy Spirit. And very much so the process of transformation, Romans 12:1-2, has to do with leading your flesh. And the Bible is very clear that you're either following your flesh and your flesh will lead you to death, or you're being spirit led. And that requires that you lead your flesh and it follows you. And like Paul says, I beat my body into submission. it's not a comfortable process, but life is pain one way or the other. I would much rather have the pain of following God and the pain of purpose than the pain of regret and the pain of emptiness.
So on that, let's talk a little bit about the personal health concept. And I'm going to ask you about three different types of health, because when I talk about health, especially as it applies to leadership, one is what I'm going to call personal, one is mental, and one is emotional. They're in that order on purpose, because I think that a lot of times people can focus on personal and the mental, but they forget the emotional component of the health when it comes to leadership. What are some of the things that you try to talk to people about in that regard? I mean, why focus on the personal health aspect of things? Why is that so important, other than obviously the biblical principle behind it?
Because we need health, spirit, soul, and body. And to me, everything in my life is rooted on the Word of God. You can find a lot of vain reasons. You can find a lot of scientific reasons. Nothing wrong with science. You can find a lot of scientific reasons to be healthy. One of those is longevity, right? I don't want to get old and be miserable. But for me, the reason that I emphasize health so much is that it's spirit, soul, and body. And God gave me this body, and I need to be a good steward of it. So the same way that I get up in the morning and I spend time in the Word of God, I have to take care of my temple. I have to take care of my body. And if I don't take good care of it, well, it's going to inhibit my ability to lead others. If I don't take care of it, it's going to shorten my life. I could live for 65 years. I could live for 125 years. You know, science is advancing in that way. We don't have to get into all of that. But I just say that to say, if I don't take care of what's been given to me, it'll be taken away from me. And that is a truth in the Word of God that many people don't like to hear. If you don't take care of what's been given to you, it'll be taken away from you. And so I want to make the most out of my life. And I know that that requires me to make my physical health a priority. Squeeze another Pastor Keith quote in here for you. He says, the best gift that you can give other people is a healthy you.
So let's talk about mental health. You know, that's a topic that a lot of people have really focused in on, especially since our wonderful 2020 experience and COVID and all those things brought to the forelight a lot of things. But there's a lot of people out there that have, let's just call it what it is, high anxiety, high depression, especially when it comes to leadership. Let's talk a little bit about that and its impact on leadership and why it's so important for people to be mentally healthy.
Yeah, it's a Bob Newhart sketch on Mad TV where he's a counselor. And basically he says, I'm going to give you two words to help you with what you're struggling with. And I won't tell the long story to make it a joke, but he said his counseling philosophy is stop it, right? Let me give it a lot of people wouldn't want me as a counselor for their mental health, but I will talk about mental health. Here's the number one thing that will shift your life, right? But other than being a follower of God, you can, and even if you're a follower of God, you can still get this wrong. Number one shift in your life. If life is about you, I guaranteed you'll be miserable. If life is all about you, guaranteed you will not have very many friends, and the friends you do have will let you down. If life is all about you, you will get to the end of your life and wish you had done it differently, and you will struggle in your thoughts your entire life. On the flip side of that, if life is not about you, if you understand that what helps a ton in this is having a kingdom biblical perspective, Mark, but if you understand that you are a son or a daughter of God and you have a job here on the earth, you have a mission, your life's not about you, your life is to serve other people, you will live a great life. If you understand that your life is not about you, it's about other people, you will have more friends than you can count. You will always have the resources that you need. And so much of the mental health that I hear about and see about, and we need work. You know, my sister's a doctor of counseling, right? And I'm not saying that we don't have a need for counseling, but at some point you have to decide to take responsibility for your life and make a decision on what do you want your life to be about. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, something that I enjoy reading about and have studied, all of the first four needs, you know, if you read, a lot of people seen the illustration, they haven't actually read his paper. Maslow talks about this in his paper. All of the first four needs are dependency needs, right? Whether you need health or meaning of significance or security, all of the first four needs, water, air, all of these things. When you get some of these things, the more you get of them, the less you desire them. And a lot of people are stuck in this survival mindset. And the truth is that we need help in doing that. Doesn't matter who you are. Somebody birthed you. Somebody had to feed you and change you as a baby. We all need help to grow. But at some point in your life, you have to get on to the most important thing, which at the top of Maslow's hierarchy is self-actualization, your purpose, and your purpose is not you. So what if you want to just move forward in your mental health? Maybe you got some boo-boos and things that you need to get fixed. But if you want to move forward in your mental health, say, you know what? I got some issues, but the most important thing in my life is not to make all the pain go away. The most important thing in my life is to give to others, to serve others. And if you will make that mindset shift, I promise you'll heal a lot faster in your mental health.
Let's talk about something else that's sometimes lost on leaders. Well, you know, everyone understands IQ. Very few people understand EQ or the emotional quotient. I know your mother is a big studier of this, and I'm sure she has given you some of her information on that topic. But let's talk about that when it comes to leadership, because one of the things I find in a lot of the people that I have dealt with in my years of serving people as a lawyer, as well as dealing with a lot of businesses, is there was a lot of people with high IQ, low EQ, and the impact it has on an organization, and especially their ability to lead others.
Well, you know, EQ is becoming more and more of a popular term. 10 years ago, EQ was like a new thing. Very few people were talking about it. Books were just coming out about it about 10 years ago. And that's really the amount of time that it takes for new topics to really get socialized. And EQs, but you know, if you're seeing it on social media, it's becoming more and more popular. People were writing books about it long before it was on social media. I say that to say, I see people all the time. People ask me about this now. More and more people are learning about it, and you'll find people who will teach you not the philosophy, not the biblical understanding, but they'll teach you the science of EQ, how to read people's facial reactions, how to communicate with tonality, right? These are the things that really EQ translates into. They'll teach you how to hack EQ. They'll teach you tonality, facial reactions, all of these things to convince people, because a lot of people will think that EQ is about influence, right? And EQ leads to that. I'll tell you the secret to having high IQ is care, right? If you care deeply about other people, that's a huge leap forward in EQ. Then it's care plus awareness, right? And I'll just say on awareness, if you struggle with awareness, one of my favorite topics, I just finished teaching a lesson on it in the course Mindset Mastery. But awareness is a skill that you have to develop and grow. We all think that we have high awareness. We all have a high awareness in one of the four quadrants. There's four different levels of, there's four different places that you can have awareness. Is emotional is one of them, right? But you have to grow in awareness and care to be able to have high EQ, right? It's not just learning some of the science or the tips or technique, but I'll just say care to me is the superpower of EQ. It's not being able to read and understand people, but if you genuinely care, and not from a, feely, touchy-feely care perspective, but that you want the best for
people. You just touched on, to me, probably the biggest principle, which is the genuineness of the caring. It's one thing to pretend that you care for others. It's another thing to genuinely care for others. And a lot of times that's putting their needs above your own, which is a telltale sign.
To me, that lesson of care, this is what EQ teaches you to do. When you care for people, you love people the way that they need to be loved, right? And this is biblical, Mark. This is the way that God loves us, right? He didn't give us what we deserve. What we all deserve is death, right? The way Bob says, the wages of sin is death. But what he did do, he says, so you sinned. I can't be right next to you anymore, but let's figure this out. You need leaders, I'll give you leaders. You want kings, I'll give you kings. You want prophets, I'll give you prophets. What can I do to help you hear me? Thousands of years of this, it's still not working. You guys can't figure it out. I'll do what I need to do to make this work. I'll send my son to die for you because I care so much that I'll make a way for us to still have relationship and that you can be redeemed. This is Ephesians 5, the way that the Bible says that a man is supposed to love his wife. Love his wife the way Christ loved the church. What does that mean? You say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this work. That's what EQ is, right? If I need to bow, I'll bow. If I need to learn how to speak to you the way that you like to hear, I'll do that. EQ is a superpower built upon care and awareness, right? It's loving people the way they need to be loved.
So I want to ask you a few questions now that are basically your thoughts, your impressions, your opinions on a few topics that are pretty important. One is your personal non-negotiables for being an effective leader. It can be one thing, it can be five things. What are your non-negotiables?
Oh, yeah. I, I mentioned this earlier, 100% my non-negotiable. I don't see you as a leader if you don't do this. It's lead from the front.
Okay. What is your personal non-negotiables for having a healthy organization?
Well, I touched on all of those things. Yeah, that's vision, mission, values, and principles. I will say as well that healthy to me, right? Not you said non-negotiables for a healthy organization, right? Define healthy. Healthy is fruit. And again, that's the word Matthew 7, you know someone by their fruit, right? You can say you're a healthy organization all day. What kind of fruit do you produce? And so as a leader of an organization, like you are, like I am, that means we have to prune our organizations to make sure that they're producing fruit. So one of my non-negotiables for having a healthy organization is that I connect with all of my team. And I'm in every organization I lead, I'm discipling people, right? I'm discipling people in the business, and in every organization I lead, I'm discipling people as followers of God. If you come to work for me, if you coach with me, I don't care what you believe, you're going to get discipled.
What are the things that you see most often in your leadership coaching that surprise you the most?
I wouldn't say it surprises me, but I will say what I see most often, number one, is a lack of purpose. Right? People don't have an understanding of what their true purpose is. It's probably my favorite thing to talk on. It's why I see it a lot. I think I draw it in. Also is I would say people are unmotivated, which is a byproduct of a lack of purpose. And it's people who have gone gone one step in 1,000 directions instead of 1,000 steps in one direction. And that's what purpose will do for you. Purpose is getting alignment. Like if you want to get the most out of your life, spend your whole life walking in one direction. If you want to waste your life, do a bunch of zigzags back and forth. Well, I'm going to go over here. I'm going to go over there. That's the symptom of a lack of purpose. And so all of those things go together. And I would say the third thing I see all the time is people will come to me. They think they'll say, you know, Garrett, I have a lack of discipline. You know, hey, Navy SEAL guy, can you help me have discipline? And this is the question that I like to prompt people with. I think actually people are more disciplined than they think they are. Discipline is a muscle, right? And you grow it. But I think people misunderstand the discipline that they actually have. I say it to them this way. I say, you know, Mark, if I told you tomorrow, if you don't get up at 4 a.m. and run a marathon, something terrible is going to happen to your entire family. Do you think you could get up at 4 a.m. and run a marathon?
Obviously.
Yeah, you could. You don't. That's not a discipline problem. You have a purpose problem. Right? When you know why you're supposed to do what you'll do, you can force yourself to do it, right? Where people don't do the things they know to do is because they don't understand why they really need to do it. And so when people can get clear on why they're supposed to be doing what they're doing, then you give them the clear mission, you can get people to move very effectively.
You know, I know you've already kind of answered this in different areas of what we've talked about today, but what would you want everyone to know about leadership if there were just a few things you're like, hey, I want to make sure you got this, and I want to make sure you heard me on this. These are the things that you want to make sure everyone understands.
Yes, I would say number one is that everyone is a leader, right? And if you don't think you're a leader, you're wrong. Everyone's a leader. Number one person that you've been called to lead is yourself. Number two, I would say what's in your heart as a leader. My mom always said it this way. She would say, you're leaking, right? And what does she mean? Right? Whatever's in you, it doesn't matter what you say, doesn't matter what you think you're doing, it doesn't matter what you think people heard, whatever's in you is coming out of you, right? And this is some of the, this is the beauty of a relationship with God. You can't fool him, Mark. He knows your thoughts. He knows the deepest part of you, right? And you can tell people one thing, you can say one thing, but God knows who you are deeply. And one of my favorite scriptures is Psalm 78. It says that God used David to shepherd his people because of the skillfulness of his hand and the integrity of his heart, right? As a leader, here's what you need to do. If you'll have a real heart for your organization, if you'll have a real heart to serve others, guaranteed in your life, you will get where you're supposed to go. You might learn some, I hope you have wisdom, because wisdom will help you not have to learn every lesson the hard way. But if you deeply care for other people and what you want most of all is to serve others, you will grow in your purpose, right? So that's what I would want people to know about leadership, is to care about the right things and know that you are called to be a leader, maybe not necessarily by title, but everyone is called to be a leader.
So there's a lot of people that are going to be listening to this podcast that are going to want to start somewhere. They're, you know, they are in their own journey where they are. What would be some of your best advice if somebody just says, hey, you know what, I want to become a better leader. Here's some things that you would recommend where they start.
Yeah. Take a look in the mirror. I could reference a Michael Jackson song. If you want anything in your life to grow, right, you need to work on yourself. Your life is a byproduct of the things that you think, the beliefs that you have, and the actions that you take in accordance with your thoughts and actions. I would also tell anyone trying to get started in life, know what you want, right? When people tell me that they want to coach with me, Mark, it's where I start with them. Well, what do you want, right? If you can't tell me what you want, it's very hard for me to help you. It's very hard for you to get what you want if you don't know what you want. Most people know what they don't want, and that won't get you anywhere.
So one of the things that I love to do on this podcast is I always love to give my guests the final thought, kind of the final word, because to me, it's, you know, I in all the years of basically asking questions, I've gotten pretty good at basically asking them and drilling down. But sometimes there's that thing that you want to make sure that everyone understands or they hear that maybe we didn't cover. So I want to kind of give you the floor to wrap up with whatever you think you need to share with folks.
You know, I've shared a lot of things, but I'm actually glad that you asked, because there's something that I try to share every opportunity that I get, everywhere I go, whether I'm speaking in person or on a podcast. And that's what I call the infinite potential unlock. So if you've heard nothing else, I'll share this at the end and leave you with this. I'm sure everyone would like to unlock their infinite potential. I'll tell you how I unlocked mine very quickly. There's two things that I heard all the time growing up. And again, I told you I'm very privileged. I come from a great family, people who have poured deeply into me, and I'm a byproduct of that. And there's two things I heard all the time growing up. Number one, I heard this from my parents from the time I was 5 years old. My mom would say it, my dad would say it, is that God has a plan for your life. And that doesn't mean jack to a five-year-old. Doesn't really mean anything to a 10-year-old either. By the time you're 15 years old and you're hearing it all the time, you're like, okay, I get it. No, you don't get it, but you at least understand that this must be true because you hear it all the time. But I can tell you when I was 22 years old, Mark, and I thought I had taken my last breath and I took another breath, I realized that it was indeed the fact that God had a plan for my life was the reason that I was still breathing, right? There's many lessons to take away from that. One of them being that speak to your children young because you can plant seeds in them that'll grow big and wide before the world can ever plant seeds in them. But the core belief in my life is that God has a plan for my life. My definition of belief, Mark, are things that you know are true but can't prove in a scientific standpoint. I know I don't have to explain that to you. I can give you evidence for my beliefs, but I can't scientifically prove them to you. But there's nothing that you could do to convince me otherwise. I know that God has a plan for my life. The second thing is this. So number one is purpose. God has a plan for my life. The second thing I heard all the time growing up is that you can have anything you want in life as long as you're willing to pay the price for it, right? And that's called potential. When you know that you have purpose in your life and you have potential, you may not know what your purpose is, but know that you have it. You may not know all the potential that you have, but know that you have it. And when you have purpose and potential, you're infinitely capable to go out and achieve everything that God has put you on the earth to do.
Garrett, I can't thank you enough for being on the podcast today. I mean, this is leadership PhD level stuff. I mean, I hope people actually take it for what it is and understand that there's a much deeper dive, that this is just a scratching of the surface. And for those that want to hear Garrett more, again, the Impossible Life podcast or the Mindset Mastery Group, you know, you can reach out and connect with him. But Garrett, again, on behalf of myself and everyone at ID Life, thank you for being here today. Most importantly, again, thank you for your service. It's because of men like you that we get to put our heads on the pillow at night and not have to think about things that are happening in the world. So on behalf of myself and everyone at ID Life, until next time, this is Mark Bennett, and we'll talk to you again real soon.